Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Every day there are countless books and articles that are published offering the key on how to make your business a success. It's easy to feel overwhelmed trying to keep up and run your business. That's why Deb Creer created the Business Power Hour. Keep up on the latest trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. Let the Business Power Hour do the heavy work for you.
Good morning, good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And today we're going to be talking about such an interesting subject. I can't wait. So welcome to our program, Donnie Aldean. Welcome, Donnie. How are you?
Hello. I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me.
I love it. I love it. Well, let me tell people a little bit about you, and then we will jump in. Now, it's funny. We were chatting before the program because your bio is pretty lengthy. And so we had to shorten it because you have done so many things, but that's all right. I love this. So a globally mobile Afro-Latina and a first generation American who by the age of 19 lived in and identified with seven cultures on five continents, Donnie Aldean is passionate about creating community for in between cultural populations. She has presented around the globe as a keynote speaker at conferences, universities, and in media as a lifestyle expert focused on media, marketing, and multiculturalism. With this background, her education, and lived experiences, she developed university curricula for global culture identity and founded the Cultures Global Multicultural Lifestyle Network. Most recently, she consulted on culture for Warner Brothers Studios and Turner Network Television, working with the Wonder Woman director, Patty Jenkins, and Star Trek actor, Chris Pine, and branding and culture for Peter Tosh Estate in Jamaica. In 2018, Cultures, the global multicultural magazine celebrating cross-cultural identity, was launched in print and she has worked with Colorado State University, the Denver Post, United Nations, World Bank, Coke, New Belgium Brewery, holy schmoly, that's quite the mix, Odell's Brewery, and Turner Broadcasting. Her publication reaches more than 1.2 million people through email, mobile, digital, and print editions distributed in grocery stores, booksellers, and university and independent bookstores. Donnie uses her global and multicultural background, academic training, and career experience in media, management, and business to position Cultures as the first ever digital first print publication and product marketplace of its kind, one that addresses global and mobile cultural identities with emphasis on hidden diversity. Oh my gosh, like I said, so much fun and so many things. So, you know, one of the things I always like to ask my guests is, how did you get to where you are today? I mean, oh my gosh, I know we could go on for like 3 hours on that, but give us kind of the version, you know, how did you get to the point where you are today?
Well, you know, it's interesting. As you and I spoke, I just came in from out of the country and mm-hmm. saw that you needed my bio and clearly sent you the wrong one. That was the one from last year. We actually reached 9 million people now.
Oh, holy schmoly.
Yes. And our goal is to be a household name in the U.S. Mm-hmm. This year. I'm so excited about that. More mm-hmm. so because of the mission of what we do, which mm-hmm. is how I came to this. So our mission is to enhance community and foster human connection. Mm-hmm. People who have a foot in two or more cultural worlds. Mm-hmm. So that means in the cultural in between, mm-hmm. people who are culturally fluid mm-hmm. are usually multi-ethnic, multicultural, mm-hmm. mixed race, or geographically mm-hmm. mobile. Okay. And when you get geographically mobile, you're thinking immigrants, refugees, mm-hmm. third culture kids. Mm-hmm. I fit all of these categories, not the refugee part, but the third culture kid part is the biggest part that I identify with.
Ah, okay.
I fit all five categories mm-hmm. in multi-ethnic, multicultural, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And third culture kids are people who grew up globally because of their parents' occupations.
Okay.
So while you are forming your identity during your formative mm-hmm. years, it really changes who you are and how you see the world. Mm-hmm. And the perspective is so different. So often you're what's considered a hidden immigrant in your own country. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely a hidden immigrant in the United States. It's so fun. It's great when I'm in other cultures because they hear my accent and they automatically assume I'm not from there. Now, I grew up in Spain and Turkey and I went to college in Germany and, mm-hmm. you know, there's Costa Rica and Trinidad and all the things. But I may know more about that culture that assumes I'm not from there.
Okay.
Than do in certain places mm-hmm. in the United States, right? Mm-hmm. But everyone assumes you're from here. Mm-hmm. Your passport's from here. Mm-hmm. Your accent is from here. Mm-hmm. But then once they get to know you, it's like, wait, you're a little weird.
You're a nice combination.
I don't understand how you think. And so I bring that up because that is often a TCK or third culture mm-hmm. kid experience. Mm-hmm. And it's how I came to this. Mm-hmm. So when I was around 35, I discovered a book called Third Culture Kids Growing Up Among Worlds. Mm-hmm. And Ruth Van Rieken, who's the author, is now has been my mentor ever since mm-hmm. then. It's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And I was so blown away reading this book because research on TCKs has been done, by the Japanese government since the 1940s and mm-hmm. by the American military since the 1950s.
Okay, which makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And what was happening is students who were, or young people were going mm-hmm. away with their parents and coming back mm-hmm. and didn't quite fit. And they were trying to figure how do we get these people to fit? Mm-hmm. Because, of course, they have these organizations around them, too. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think missionary kids, military brats, mm-hmm. Civil service brats, mm-hmm. Airline kid mm-hmm. brats,
right.
all so many different ones. Mm-hmm. I run into people all the time. They go, us, too. And I'm like, wow, I never thought of that. But it's so interesting because you, at the time, think this is just your experience. And mm-hmm. for me, these were quirks of my personality, things. Mm-hmm. How I thought differently than maybe other people in the US right. or did things differently. I just thought it was my personality. Mm-hmm. Well, I read this book and I'm like, wait, no, you mean it's my culture that I'm a third culture mm-hmm. kid? This is my actual mm-hmm. culture. And these are the explanations for mm-hmm. these things that I do that I thought were mine mm-hmm. that actually fit the whole group. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely outstanding. So my mind was blown and I wanted everyone who had an experience like mine to mm-hmm. understand, truly understand where they came from mm-hmm. and be able to decide which parts of them were themselves and which parts of them were part of mm-hmm. this third culture.
Right.
And that's how Cultures was born. Mm-hmm. I actually wanted to do a PhD on it and only schools abroad really were interested. There's a lot of people who study this area mm-hmm. and they typically do it in Asia and Europe mm-hmm. and Australia, you know, South America, mm-hmm. but the United States, it's pretty difficult to be able to get a PhD in this subject area. Mm-hmm. It's what you and I were talking about, mm-hmm. Colorado State, we're talking about CU and DU, our mm-hmm. two
right.
Mm-hmm. amongst the three of them. Mm-hmm. And I had intended to go back mm-hmm. For my PhD with that, but no one ever really quite understood what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. So
interesting.
Magazine was born.
I love it. Well, you know, one of the things that I was thinking of is, you know, having all of this, it's almost like you were homeless, or was it that you had multi-homes?
You got it. You hit it right on the head. It's both.
Okay.
You're literally homeless and you have homes everywhere. Mm-hmm. So they call it rootless and rooted at the same time. Mm-hmm. You could be at home anywhere mm-hmm. Because of your mix of cultures and growing up, understanding and being able to weave in and out mm-hmm. of all other people's mm-hmm. understanding. It creates this global understanding that makes mm-hmm. it easier to bring people together and build bridges. Mm-hmm. But it makes it more difficult because your breadth mm-hmm. of understanding is so mm-hmm. wide. And most people who grew up monoculturally, their breadth of understanding is very limited.
Right.
So you have a home everywhere. You could be at mm-hmm. home everywhere. At the same time, there's a point where, or part of you that people just don't understand. And mm-hmm. so you feel a little homeless with that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. You know, I am as single culture as you can get, you know, but I remember it was really funny when we were in Scotland and Ireland. One of the things I know, you know, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, I spent 2 weeks with people who looked like me, right? Because, you know, this redhead freckly face here, you know, is more unusual in the States. Yeah. You know, and of course it really was, I mean, people just assumed that I was Scottish and I'm Scottish, but yeah, I mean, it was so interesting for me to think it was almost I'm home. And my relatives have not lived in Scotland for several generations. I mean, this was not that, you know, but yeah, I mean, it was just, I identified with that simply because I looked like them.
Right. Well, I mean, that makes a huge difference. I mean, you hear it all the time when people talk about diversity. We focus on the culture part of it. In the United States, diversity typically is race-based. Mm-hmm. And people talk about that. And that visual diversity is super important, right, as well as the hidden diversity. Mm-hmm. For me, the hidden diversity is important. Mm-hmm. But visual, being around people who look like you and supposedly you supposedly think like them, it makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not sticking out, you're not on your own. It's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. We were just in Trinidad and Tobago at Carnival, and there's one Carnival band that was mostly not melanated people.
They look like me. We can just be honest, right? Okay.
It was kind of funny because
I thought Carnival, that would be unique.
Well, I thought to, I mean, because there's all kinds of people in Trinidad Tobago. People often think it's mostly African, but it's mostly East Indian and then African and Chinese and Arabic. But I thought to myself, I wonder if this is how people in the United States feel, because for the first time ever in my life, I thought, wow, they really stand out. They really stand out. And also all the other groups were very mixed. This group wasn't very mixed. So it stuck out. So yes, I think having people around that look like you is important.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and you know, you've obviously been to many, many different countries. And one of the things I was thinking was, you know, part of what we see is, you know, not just cultural and race, but sex. You know, you're talking about the fact that, you know, you're going to Dubai before too long. You've been in Dubai. I mean, those are clearly countries where women are treated very differently. Not going to say good or bad. I mean, it's just they're treated differently. So what is it like to see that? And you know, kind of, you know, and I had a friend who lived in Dubai for a while, and she said it was very interesting. But she actually enjoyed it.
Yes. Oh, before I answer, what did she enjoy about it?
Now she is Caucasian. Let me put, you know, she was there teaching at a State Department school, and they, you know, so it was very different. I mean, it was, let's say, sheltered, you know, but she's one of these people, she taught history. And so for her, she just absorbed. I mean, you know, she loved all of the culture, all of the history. But there were things that rubbed her wrong, you know, like some of the students at the school were from the king's family, prince's family, all of those things. And she said the boys and the girls were treated very differently. You know, she would not have been allowed to teach a male child. That really rubbed her the wrong way, because she just thought, you know, you need to have lots of different viewpoints, right? But you know, she just loved all the history and things like that.
Well, I love to hear that. Well, I'm that way as well, because there's people who travel and then there's people who really immerse themselves in the culture, and I try to. You know, there's times I've traveled, right, to go on vacation, things like that. But usually I immerse myself in culture, and that's why I stay in places for a very long period of time. Mm-hmm. I tend to live there when I go, because that to me is the richness of the experience, really experiencing the culture. Yeah,
what you're seeing in the Hilton is a little bit different.
yes, so different. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, it's interesting. Here's the most interesting thing to me. So this question, very recently, like in the last 2 years, it's come up a lot that my friends that more resemble you than me. Mm-hmm. They, whenever I bring up certain subjects and I think of it in the United States as a race thing or as a culture thing, and they typically say, oh, no, I always thought that was a female-male thing. And I find that interesting. I really think a lot of it is based on experience. Well, so for you, I'm assuming when you think male-female or when you think of your diversity or being minoritized, being a woman is the minoritization that you have, right?
Right.
Well, for me, I appear, when you look at me, people assume I'm African-American. I appear, I'm Black. So that is my minoritization that I see first. I see that before I see being a woman, right? And so it's been interesting that in the last few years, it's come up a lot. So I think of that first before I think of being a woman.
Right.
And with that being said, I haven't had too many problems being a woman. I mean, there are times when it's clear and it's clear from a cultural standpoint. I've had it happen in an airport in Europe with a Nigerian man and how the European, airport officer was handling this man. And it's just so interesting. So I think based from my lens, I really do think that white women in America and how what their experience is with men is similar to how Black people feel or people of color feel about being minoritized.
Right.
Because the few times I have noticed that it was me being a woman, it's the same. It's the same oppression. It's the same type of...
it's the same feeling in the pit of your stomach. You know,
same entitlement of, I mean, I hate to say it, you could tell me if you agree or not, but people who have the power tend to make up stories more often so that they can be believed.
There's definitely, shall we say, revisionist history.
Yes. And you're, you know, I'm still thinking of the same situation in the airport with the Nigerian man. Basically, he was saying that he was in front of me and I came from the back of the line and that I should have waited back there. And I'm looking at him with my jaw on the floor because it was so absolute. I had been waiting for a half an hour at the front of the line and he literally came from the back. Yes. And his story when he got to the front, because I said, you know, and he's not used to this, excuse me, I'm in line. Like, where are you going? And so the gentleman, the European gentleman in front of us is looking at the two of us and he's like, I don't know what she's talking about. She was in the back of the line. Everything that he did, he attributed to me. And of course, the European man took his side. And the whole time I was like, I couldn't believe. So that's what I mean about when, and when you see revisionist history, it's like, they know they have the power as a male. They know that they'll be. So even though this gentleman had been sitting here looking at me for half an hour, he literally switched and was like, okay, yeah, that story sounds plausible. Go ahead.
Well, and then it's, do you cause a fuss or not? I mean, that's the other thing is, you know, because let's be honest, I think many times we think I'm not going to cause a fuss. And so unfortunately what that means is we just let them know what they did was okay.
Well, he was clear that I didn't think it was okay. They were both clear that I didn't think it was okay. But I was in such shock after he said, oh no, she was in the back of the line. And then in shock that he said that when it was obviously not
right.
In shock that the second gentleman believed it or
who had witnessed it.
Had been watching me for a half an hour. And knew it wasn't true. I was in such shock. So they did know how I felt because I did say, hey, where are you going? I'm in line, you know, that kind of thing. But that happened very often with people who aren't people of color as well. I do remember one time, I think I was in Jamaica and I was in a line and it was only me there waiting to go to a ticket counter. And a blonde woman walked up and she went to the other side. And now this woman at the counter was wrapping up and I had been there, I don't know, 20 minutes. And I looked over at this woman thinking, I know you're not going to try to walk right
now. Yeah, you're not going to try it.
So I stood there and I was watching her and the woman finished and she looks up and she looks at me and she looks at the other lady and the other lady started to walk. And I looked at the other lady and the lady at the counter looked at me. So the lady at the counter pointed to me and she waved me in.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman was starting to walk at the same time. And as soon as she waved me in, mm-hmm. you could almost see the jaw drop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, uh-huh, mm-hmm. that's how it feels. Right. Well, first of all, I had been there for mm-hmm. the whole time. But mm-hmm. I think she thought, because she was blonde, mm-hmm. that she was going to get waved up and I would have to wait.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
The only other time I could think that happened was actually in Colorado, an East Indian man. I was mm-hmm. I was working with someone at a counter. This happens a lot in retail. And I'm buying some things and he walks up out of nowhere and asks this woman a question.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're like, excuse me.
Yes. So I turned and looked at him and I said, excuse me, we were working on a transaction.
Right.
And he said, oh, you know, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, and turned to her again for her to answer the question.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I love your reaction on that. Mm-hmm. And then I turned to him and I said, yes, you did mean to interrupt, or you,
because you just did it again, you putz.
Exactly. And it was so funny because he was so aghast. He could not believe that I brought right. it up. And the woman behind the counter was also aghast.
Yeah. She's she's probably thinking, I'm not quite sure what to do here.
I do love when, I just had that happen in Scotland as well, actually, now that I think about it. But it's so, in both instances, it's so pervasive. The gentleman, I think they actually do mean, oh, no, I didn't mean to interrupt. They're just so used to it.
Right.
They're used mm-hmm. to be able to mm-hmm. jump in and mm-hmm. bombard and ask mm-hmm. whatever they want, whenever right. they want.
The sense of entitlement.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting because it really, the person who is the service provider at that mm-hmm. point, it depends on if they have, I'm going to say, the cojones.
Mm-hmm.
to
right.
say well, something, right.
And they can certainly very politely say, sir, yeah. I'm going to finish with this young lady and, you know, and then I'll be happy to answer your question. But yeah, it's.
I've had people do that. I'm always impressed when they do that. Mm-hmm. But some people, right. they really are intimidated and they will just answer the question.
Right. Well, and often sometimes they think we'll get rid of them.
<You know? laughs> But often it takes more time. It wasn't just a second. Mm-hmm. And usually I'll speak up again. Okay, this is taking too long.
Right.
Finish my tune.
We're going to finish what we were doing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it puts that other person in an uncomfortable position. Mm-hmm. And often I think people, they're not up for it. They don't know what to do.
Because they don't want to cause a problem, but being treated like you're invisible. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, it's, and I have had that happen as a woman, you know, I'll be honest, not all that often. I did have a job and this was a while ago. I worked as a lobbyist and this was 30-ish years ago and this was in Colorado. And I tell you, it was pretty much the good old boy white club. And it still, to some degree, is. But, you know, 30 years ago, it definitely was. Yeah. Now, the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate were both women. Ooh. So, you know, that was a bit. But, you know, and I remember one time I was doing something. And one of our esteemed lawmakers patted me. Now, luckily, he patted me on the top of my head and not someplace where I would have broken his arm. But he patted me on top of my head and he said, Honey, you need to go get, and he called, you know, one of the guys that I worked with. But yeah, he patted me on my head like I was a 6-year-old girl. You know, now I live in the South now. We call people honey, we call people darling, you know, all of those things. As you know, now I try and watch. I don't want it to ever come across as being derogatory or something like that. But yeah, I remember thinking, what the bad words, right? And but I also knew this man was in a position of power. He was a legislator, and I could not cause a fuss. Now, well, I did tell, I told the guys that I worked with, I said, this is what this guy did, and they set him straight. They said, you know, she is as much a team member as we are. You do not lay hands on her.
Well, that's where you're smarter than I am, because I'm polite about it as a.
I think I was just so stunned. Like you were saying, I was just like, when oh my stunned, God, he patted me.
Hard to get out of that. Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, it's so funny. This totally off subject, but in Trinidad and Tobago, Felicia Farshad, from Grey's Anatomy, Trinidad and Tobago. And they had been talking about it on the radio. Mm-hmm. And I was at the Visit Trinidad office because we're doing all this filming and this different thing. So I turned around and she's standing right there in front of me.
Oh my gosh. I would have been all a Twitter.
that's why I brought it up. My mouth literally dropped open. I just said, for about 3 seconds. And just when I was grabbing my composure to say something to her, because I'm sure she's used to it all the time, turned to go away.
Oh no.
But I was stunned and I just said,
yeah. And if you'd said something, it probably would have been evident.
I've had that happen before. I usually don't get starstruck, but the times I have, it's probably happened 2 times. The times I have, it's pretty shocking. So,
yeah, I've done that where I usually I can gather my composure, but sometimes not. I just stand there and act like a dingbat. But
in those situations where you're really shocked that the person did this other thing, I get it. It's hard to pull yourself back.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And just when people say things, sometimes you're thinking, I can't believe that came out of your mouth. I can do my mother has the one eyebrow up thing. I can do that really pretty good when I need to, but just other things. Like I worked with a guy now, this was again, 30-ish years ago. He called me honey or sweetie. Now, I think it was just because he never bothered to learn my name. Now, I was the only woman that worked in the office. This was not a complicated process. But he always called me honey or sweetie. And, I let it slide for a little bit. And then in front of the president, he called me honey or one of those. And I responded back calling him honey or sweetie.
And what happened?
It ended. I think it was one of those things where I think he realized, oh my God. and the company president just kind of looked at me and he knew what I was doing, and
the president knew what you were doing.
The president did. Yes. He knew. And he was this wonderful, delightful man. And he would have said something if it needed to be said, but yeah, the guy never called me that again. It was
love a lot, love and lovely. And there's times where I'm like, yeah, you don't really know that person. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah. Or I don't know him at all. I mean, it might be the person at Starbucks and I will say, thanks, darling. But then I do think, okay, this is somebody who maybe had a name tag on, right? Yeah. And so I should have used their name. I didn't, and things like that. But it comes back to, we need to treat them as a human,
right?
And if they've got that name tag on, or heavens, if you know their name, use that name. It's just kind of one of those things where, treat them with respect. And I always think, okay, if they just called me honey, sweetie, darling, depending obviously on the context, but would I think, really?
I think context is so important because there's times when people say honey, sweetie, darling, and you're like, excuse me. But then there's other times they say love or whatever. And
those times as a term of endearment. The woman who is our CEO for C-Suite Network is this incredibly talented, incredibly knowledgeable, wonderful woman. Her name is Trisha Benn. And I don't know, somewhere along the line, I called her darling. And she melted. She said, oh my gosh, my mother calls me that. Oh. And so now that's always, the thing that I do is when we're on a Zoom or something, I'll send her a little private message and I will say, hi, darling, how you doing? But I also, because my thought was, when I first saw her reaction, I thought, oh no, I've way overstepped. But she said, I do see that as a term of endearment. Now, would she put up with it from other people? I don't know. That's one of the things that we're taught in communications, right? That people love hearing the sound of their own name. So why don't we use it more?
Interesting. Yeah. I love that. I love that.
But yeah. So, you know, let's talk more about the magazine, because so it is C-U-L-T-U-R-S.
Yes.
There's no E. What happened to the E? Where did the E go?
The E ran away.
Oh, from no.
Father, darling.
That was it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, the missing E stands for the hidden diversity of our population. So again, we are this cultural in between. Mm-hmm. We're in the shades of gray. So you'll all notice if you go to Culture's website, mm-hmm. our colors are black, white, and shades of gray. Mm-hmm. It's our population lives mm-hmm. in the shades of gray. You have a foot mm-hmm. in one area, a foot in another area. Again, and just to remind you what mm-hmm. the population is, it's multi-ethnic, mm-hmm. multicultural, mm-hmm. mixed race, or geographically mm-hmm. mobile. Immigrants, refugees, and third mm-hmm. culture kids. And so the diversity is often hidden, is kind of like what I was just saying. Mm-hmm. I'm what's considered, and this is a typical mm-hmm. term, a hidden immigrant, mm-hmm. because I look like you, I sound like you, but I don't think like you.
Mm-hmm.
You think that I'll think like mm-hmm. you, because anything else on the outside mm-hmm. looks perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. That's a hidden immigrant. There's other people who look like they don't fit at all. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, international adoptees mm-hmm. get this. Mm-hmm. You don't look like you fit. Oh, where are you from? I'm from I don't know, San Diego.
Right.
Where are you really from?
Yeah, San Diego.
Well, where did you come from originally?
San Diego.
Yeah, and LA. People get that, and they're right. The person who's speaking is trying to say. Mm-hmm. You're from somewhere else, right. Where are you from and how did you get here? Mm-hmm. But the person who's responding is saying, mm-hmm. no, I'm from here.
Right.
I'm from somewhere mm-hmm. else because mm-hmm. I look different mm-hmm. than you do.
Right.
And so that hidden diversity, mm-hmm. and of course, there's many other layers, there's many other mm-hmm. Dimensions to it, mm-hmm. but that hidden diversity is where the missing E mm-hmm. comes from in cultures or went
I
to
love it.
Cultures. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. And it's funny, I was, as you were talking about that, I thought, nobody in America would ever look at me and say, no, where are you from? Now, the really funny thing is I tell them I live in Atlanta, but I'm from Colorado. But yeah, it would never occur to somebody, especially because, I have zero accent, or people would say I sound Midwest. But yeah, it would never occur to somebody to ask me, well, where am I from? Right. Because I am American, right? And so, yeah, that's just, it's kind of one of those where it can be insulting or interesting, meaning, it's kind of, one of those, but.
It's really interesting because for me, because I'm interested in people's mm-hmm. cultures and their backgrounds mm-hmm. and their stories. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I will ask someone, let's say they have an accent. I'll say, I pick up a hint of an accent. Uh-huh. Where's your accent from?
Right. Yes. And not you, but where's your accent?
Mm-hmm. Well, depending on their life experience. Mm-hmm. You can see mm-hmm. lots of thoughts going through their mm-hmm. head before they answer. Mm-hmm. And depending on if there's a lot of thoughts, I'll mm-hmm. then go the next step and say, basically let them know, here's why I'm asking.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because sometimes that's the equivalent for them, mm-hmm. the equivalent of where are you from? You're not from here. Mm-hmm. You don't belong here. Why are you?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting mm-hmm. to see people's lived experiences and try to be very mm-hmm. Sensitive to those. Mm-hmm. There's times in my life, I've even said to people, you're thinking this and I'm thinking mm-hmm. that. You got to remember, mm-hmm. I grew up in XYZ, whichever right. mm-hmm. it was most important mm-hmm. to. And so I don't think the same. But it is so strong in people mm-hmm. that you're sure that mm-hmm. I'm an American that they blow it off. They think I'm making mm-hmm. an excuse.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So often, to your point about not wanting to make a fuss, mm-hmm. as a TCK, you just don't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, okay, we're not having this argument today. Mm-hmm. We're not going to bother mm-hmm. with it. But it's too bad because mm-hmm. people try, a lot of times people try to tell you about themselves, try mm-hmm. to tell you who they are, try to explain their actions, especially if you don't understand them. And often it's like, how open are we to listening to that?
Right.
Mm-hmm. They're just making an excuse. Mm-hmm. Do we think they're not listening to you? How much are we really actively listening mm-hmm. to that person mm-hmm. and respecting who they are?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And then we add another layer to all of this with LGBTQ. What is someone's pronoun? And, things like that. And, or even just looking at them and trying to figure out, what's their pronoun. I had a guest on one time, and his pronoun, see, I get it wrong, was they, right?
Pronoun, yeah.
Person looked very masculine, right?
Okay.
But I tried really, really hard. I mean, I wrote they in all caps, all of those things. But at one point I did say he, and I immediately said, I am terribly sorry. Their response was, you're trying.
And I love that. Yeah, I love that.
And I love that. I just thought that was so great. But then I had the opposite one time where, I get the information for my guests from whoever, from the guests, from their bookers, whoever. And they had repeatedly used the pronoun they.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I was just ready, to say they, all those things. But I asked right before the program started in kind of the pre-chat, like you and I had, about the pronoun. He was really offended. And I said, I'm terribly sorry that, your bookers. And so I think what had happened was either they had someone who was transgender or to more than one person, right? Because they is also plural. And they just hadn't taken that out of the bio. But yeah, he was, oh, I am a he. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, dude, enough. It is challenging because we want to honor those choices. But it is, sometimes it's like, but as they told me when I, slipped up during the program, they were so honored that at least I was trying,
I find it extra hard too when you're in media, mm-hmm. especially if you're a writer. Mm-hmm. Well, anyone in media is a writer because you have to write mm-hmm. your scripts, different things like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And it's drilled into your head, like to use a plural for a singular.
That's just right. We learned in first grade, you don't do that. Mm-hmm.
Well, but I mean, even as teaching journalism at university, that was something I had to focus on. Mm-hmm. And then came the pronouns. And like you, I focused mm-hmm. on it very much. And it was hard. It was hard because it had been drilled into my head. Mm-hmm. And when you're writing journalistic copy, mm-hmm. making sure mm-hmm. that the sentences match up properly, because mm-hmm. the way we speak isn't often the way we should be writing. Mm-hmm. And so then now undoing that, mm-hmm. it took a lot of effort. Mm-hmm. I said that to someone and they just rolled their eyes at me. And I thought, okay, we won't bring that up again.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. But that eye roll, for whatever reason, like I worked so hard at it and now mm-hmm. it's not a problem. Now mm-hmm. it's easy for me. Mm-hmm. I do remember one time I also thought someone was someone else. They had mm-hmm. their head down mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. people had close crop haircut. Mm-hmm. Right. One was a he and one was transgender mm-hmm. that went by they. Mm-hmm. And I thought one was the other person. And I said, hey, girly. And they looked
Oops.
Up. I know. I was like, oh. And so in my head, I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? What mm-hmm. do I do? And we're talking for a second. And they had no problem. They just kept talking like nothing happened. Hey, how are you doing? Da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And then I finally said, I guess I should ask you your pronouns because mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out a way to introduce mm-hmm. that I realized I made an error. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the person got upset. I don't know if they were upset before, but they weren't going to show it.
Right.
Or know what happened. Mm-hmm. To this day, this person doesn't talk to me. I never did say, they said, yes, my pronoun is not girly. Because I also, who knows, maybe mm-hmm. the offensive thing was girly, like you mm-hmm. said, sweetie, honey, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I thought this was a friend, mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It was someone who was.
And you could have just as easily used the wrong name, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah, yes, mm-hmm. yes. But I didn't try to say, "Oh no, I thought you were such and such person," because mm-hmm. I just thought that would add insult to me.
Right? Yeah, it was. You were going to dig that hole deeper.
So I just accepted it. I took the beating.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that person never really got over that. Aww. And for me, I think it goes in all areas. You have to try. And as long as you're doing mm-hmm. your best. And for me, it's having the courage to stick your foot in it, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
To make the mistakes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because so many people try not to make mistakes, and that's where you make the mistake. Mm-hmm. Because you're too scared. You don't necessarily you have to develop the courage to, mm-hmm. okay, what if I do it wrong? Mm-hmm. It's okay to do it wrong mm-hmm. as long as you're trying and you learn.
Right.
If mm-hmm. you never learn, that's a whole different mm-hmm. thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you make the effort very quickly, especially there's nothing that'll get you right as getting it wrong will.
I mean, you get
it quickly after that.
Oh, and like my radio guest, I mean, I was like, they're, I mean, I was not going to mess that up again. But it was, it is interesting. And of course, you know, now it gets even more interesting because of the focus so much with, you know, diversity, equality, equity, and I'm going to get all of those wrong, but because it is so important that we have that diversity in especially our companies, right? And so it makes it challenging, which then, of course, the bad part is you have people that are like, no, we're not even going to try. We just know we're going to screw up, and so we're not going to try. But why is it important that we have diversity and inclusion and equity and all of the other little, you know, words that are in there?
Well, we're doing ourselves a disservice and we're doing our companies a disservice by not making the errors, right? Again, it takes courage. And when you have the courage to step out and admit that you've done something incorrectly and try to correct it and make a difference and sit in the discomfort and the pain of when you do make the error.
Right.
I do it as well, like, as I just told you. That is life-changing. And so some of the world's best companies, Apple, L'Oreal, Pepsi.
Right.
They're innovative because of the diversity of their team. When you have diversity of thought, again, when we go back to hidden diversity, may look and sound like you, but I don't think like you. Diversity of thought, diversity of being, that diversity of lived experiences, bringing all that together to make decisions, make all of us better.
Right.
Because again, if you think of the breadth versus the breadth and depth of someone's experiences versus another's, you're not going to be able to see outside of your own box as much as you try until something happens to get you out of that box, right? And so when we're able to have others point out, well, what about this? And you think, oh, well, I never thought about that. Or that's a thing? Well, of course it's a thing. And then they explain it. And you're like, wow, that doesn't happen in my world. Right. That diversity of thought, that diversity of being, that diversity of people and lived experiences is really important to making sure that we stay the best of the best.
Right. Well, and of course, our companies are selling products to a very diverse set of customers. You know, now there are some that are very specific, and it's more sometimes economically, right? You know, I'm thinking like Rolls Royce, Mercedes Benz, you know, and things like that. But, you know, we need those differing opinions and knowledge base in order to reach those markets. You know, it would be just like if you told me I have to put my head in the mind of a 30-year-old male. Well, that's not going to work. So why not have a 30-year-old male as part of our team?
Yes. And there's times that you still do have to put yourself in that situation. Right. You know, in teaching journalism, I remember saying when I was trying to get the students, it was very difficult to get people to think outside of themselves. That is probably the hardest thing. But having an open mind is the best way to do that. And knowing that you don't know everything, just being open to whatever is out there and what other people have to say. Again, back to diversity. So when we would talk about, okay, well, what if you, young lady, have to write for Men's Health? What are you going to do?
Right.
They have to put themselves in situations where they'll be able to write from a point of view that this audience will understand. And so when you think of it that way, we're able to do it. We've done it in, with many things. There's just other things that we have a block that we think it can't happen.
Right. But it a lot of it is we have to open our minds, you know, and think, okay, they're going to use different terminology or different words, you know, all of these things, and, you know, and be able to really put ourselves. And that, I mean, that really shows someone who is a good writer, good communicator, whatever, who can put themselves in those places. Right.
Well, because you have to think, you always have to think about your audience, whether it's a business, whether it's writing, whether it's acting. You think about the person who's going to be receiving this and how would it affect them? how would you act toward them? Mm-hmm. And because they're the receiver mm-hmm. and the receiver is the one that you want to impact.
Right.
So why would you want to send a message that would be received by a whole mm-hmm. different person? Mm-hmm. If this is your receiver, you have right. to make sure that the message mm-hmm. impacts them properly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And that kind of comes to, so you have this statement on Culture's website, and I love this. We live in a wonderful world that is full of beauty, charm, and adventure. There is no end to the adventures that we can have if only we seek them with our eyes open.
Yes, 1,000%. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's back to the open-mindedness. Mm-hmm. It's back to just really opening every part of you to experience mm-hmm. things that you may not know, mm-hmm. because they may be right mm-hmm. there in your neighborhood. You don't have to go to a faraway country. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go to another neighborhood mm-hmm. necessarily to experience it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to, because mm-hmm. if you've taken the time to immerse yourself in environments that are homogeneous as well, mm-hmm. then you're not going to hear ideas different than yours. Or if mm-hmm. you shut them down over time, mm-hmm. you're not going to hear, people mm-hmm. won't be willing to share ideas that are different than you may think. So yeah, we have to be open on all levels.
Well, and you really, you know, especially now, granted, I live in Atlanta, and so it is pretty much a big melting pot. You know, where I grew up in the mountains of Colorado was much as white and as non-diverse as you could get. But it was so funny because I was talking to somebody the other day, and there are, I think, 10 homes on our side of the cul-de-sac here. My husband and I are the only white straight couple.
Oh.
It's, you know, we are the most diverse neighborhood. It's very interesting. And so, you know, we had to stop and think about it, because it was like, okay, you know, because it really wasn't something where it was like, oh, they're this and they're this and they're this. It was like, we were just all neighbors.
Yes. And I love that. I mean, my life has been that way. My world has been this way as mm-hmm. far as I can remember. My first trip internationally, I think I said, was at 2 weeks old. So I'm used to being in mm-hmm. situations like that. And it's interesting. There are people who are used to being oppressed mm-hmm. often can be some of the most closed-minded to other people who, mm-hmm. who look like them, mm-hmm. but may not think like them. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's been an interesting place to be, but I love hearing that about your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that is the place where I thrive when mm-hmm. I'm with, in environments where there are many different types of people, many different types of
people. You know, it gets kind of boring if everybody has the same view and the same, you know, we want to hear about other things, you know, and so that's the thing. It's like, okay, tell us about this. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
So it's very interesting. You know, as you know, you were pitched to our program by a group of students that yeah. are studying kind of cultural diversity communication. And I don't know if you know, they sent me sample questions that I should be asking you. and so I bless them. I love this. I love this. And so, you know, it's like, so here's one of their questions. You know, Colorado, you're in Colorado, has a small percentage of Black residents. It's only about 4%, right? So how do you know, how should Coloradoans, and granted this program is airing in March, but how should they celebrate Black history, bless you, not just in February, but every month?
Well, I mean, for someone like me, it's easy, right?
Right. It's all Black history.
Well, no, besides the fact that I'm Black. I mean, but I'm Afro-Latina, so I feel the same way about mm-hmm. being Latina. But also, you know, you were talking about being Scottish and Irish. Mm-hmm. My great-grandparents are Scottish and Irish as mm-hmm. well. And
cousin!
You never know. I always wondered that myself. I was just in Scotland and I absolutely mm-hmm. loved it. I was doing a talk at a university mm-hmm. and then I was with my Trinidadian cousin. Mm-hmm. That's where we have our Irish mm-hmm. side in Ireland. And it all clicked. I love the fiddle. Mm-hmm. I love an Irish jig. Mm-hmm. I love Irish food. Even my Irish friends are like, I like Irish food. I'm like, I absolutely love mm-hmm. it. Right? The heavy soups and stews and mm-hmm. the bread. But it's funny because in each of us, scientifically, it's been proven that we have DNA from the last four generations within our bodies. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. My Irish generation was within that mm-hmm. time. So it right. was funny to go there and find mm-hmm. out. I didn't know before that I had mm-hmm. Irish ancestry. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, now all of this made mm-hmm. sense. Irish dance, Irish mm-hmm. music, Irish food, whatever. Anyway, point mm-hmm. being, even I like the diversity of all things, not just, mm-hmm. you know, I know the questions mm-hmm. about Black History Month, but the thing where I was going with that is we can all do this, right? Mm-hmm. For me, the best way of being and place of being is having as mm-hmm. much culture from, mm-hmm. again, not race, but right. culture from mm-hmm. all over mm-hmm. as part of my everyday world as mm-hmm. possible. That's what makes me mm-hmm. happy. That's what keeps me effective. That's mm-hmm. what keeps me innovative and thinking and learning all the time mm-hmm. and finding right. out things that are different mm-hmm. than or what I thought mm-hmm. they should be. So in terms of how do you celebrate Black History mm-hmm. Month every month of the year, every mm-hmm. day of the year, first of all, Black history is American history, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
We did an issue for Cultures Magazine in 2020. Actually, it's a great story. It was our Time for Change issue. We were going, mm-hmm. we were at press mm-hmm. and it takes about 6 months to go to press mm-hmm. with any.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We were at press and George Floyd happened. Ooh. And we pulled back, mm-hmm. said we pulled it back mm-hmm. and in 10 days rejiggered the wow. whole issue. Mm-hmm. Yes. To include what mm-hmm. had happened with George Floyd mm-hmm. because I just couldn't. There's no way we could.
You couldn't ignore that. Not with what your magazine does.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we did that and it was definitely worth it. Mm-hmm. And one of the quotes that I absolutely love from that issue was from a Nigerian mother who is now American. Mm-hmm. She and her husband, both from Nigeria, met in the United States mm-hmm. at grad school and had a daughter who actually since then has repatriated. Well, I guess she never, she wasn't from Nigeria. Mm-hmm. She was born mm-hmm. American, but repatriated to Nigeria, her mm-hmm. parents' homeland. But the mom had said to the daughter, who's American, no one should judge Americans, meaning African Americans, mm-hmm. until they learn African American history.
Mm. I love that.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's so true mm-hmm. because the diaspora around the world, you know, I'm Trinidad and Costa Rican, mm-hmm. whether you're from any mm-hmm. other place in Africa, and there's many places around the world mm-hmm. that people don't realize there's Africans in different countries in India, right. mm-hmm. South America, all the things. Mm-hmm. And there are different perceptions mm-hmm. of African Americans mm-hmm. when you come to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what she was saying is, until you learn the history, you will not understand who these people are. And mm-hmm. what you see on TV and what mm-hmm. you see every day, that is not going to tell mm-hmm. you. And it's 100% real. Mm-hmm. So back to how do people live this every day? Black history mm-hmm. is American history. Mm-hmm. First of all, I would suggest that people learn more about real Black history.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When I say real, it's some of the books out there mm-hmm. that we've learned from, you know, it mm-hmm. has whitewashed history or... Right. has omitted certain mm-hmm. things. When you find out, I mean, the resilience of the people that are, mm-hmm. who are here, it is absolutely amazing mm-hmm. and outstanding. And it changes your perspective mm-hmm. on how you see people mm-hmm. and how you see the oppression that mm-hmm. some people have been able to thrive in, some people have succumbed to, mm-hmm. but it changes your perspective and sees people, and you are now able to see people as more human.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And with that, so I would suggest people learn history, first mm-hmm. of all. Secondly, and make a point to do it, be mm-hmm. very intentional about right. it. That includes reading Black authors, mm-hmm. Supporting Black causes, mm-hmm. Supporting Black businesses. Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard some hubbub about, you know, why does it have to be a Black business? Why does it have to be a woman-owned business? Why can't you just be a business? And for me, those are people who definitely want to keep their heads in the sand. If you right. learn mm-hmm. all the statistics, if you learn the history, mm-hmm. you realize, as we started the conversation with, women have challenges mm-hmm. that men don't have.
Right.
It's just, that's how society mm-hmm. is still built, mm-hmm. still trying to overcome them. Mm-hmm. People of color have challenges mm-hmm. that people who aren't people mm-hmm. of color don't have.
Right.
It's just a fact. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every once in a while, you'll see someone pluck someone very famous out. Oh, well, look at so-and-so. They mm-hmm. didn't have an issue, or they're doing so much better than I am. It cannot be a singular thing.
Right.
You have to look mm-hmm. at, have a holistic view. Mm-hmm. So I think learning history, being very intentional about going out mm-hmm. there and seeking out Black American history, mm-hmm. because it is American history. Mm-hmm. You'll learn so yes. much about mm-hmm. the United States by doing mm-hmm. that. Right. And I can say that as someone mm-hmm. who left here at 2 weeks mm-hmm. old.
and as you said, making sure it's correct.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
who wrote it, who, yes. you know, better because from, I yeah. would put a different spin on it.
Yes.
Then, you know, just because I don't understand it, right? You know, I didn't yes. live it. You know, and so, yeah, it wouldn't be that I was deliberately trying to misinterpret or anything like that. It would just be my exactly. perspective would be different.
Well, you know, it's interesting because last summer I was in Spain all of last summer. Mm-hmm. I was working, perfecting my Spanish. My dad's native language is Spanish. Mm-hmm. He unfortunately passed away during mm-hmm. COVID. And so, mm-hmm. I learned German and French, in my studies, mm-hmm. but never focused on Spanish because I lived in Spain when I was little and I was right. like, everybody speaks Spanish. Mm-hmm. I don't want to mm-hmm. do that. Anyway, I've been working on it the last couple of years and I was in Spain a few months last year. And to that end, we were talking about Christopher Columbus because mm-hmm. it was Thanksgiving in the mm-hmm. US and I was mm-hmm. explaining to my friend who was from Spain. He's mm-hmm. actually German Spanish. We're talking about what that is and mm-hmm. who Christopher Columbus is and what that means in the United States, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And I made some comment about Columbus not being this great guy. And he said, oh, well, he wasn't celebrated in Spain. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And then he went on this whole, you know, mm-hmm. lecture about what they learn in Spain about Columbus. And it's nothing good.
Right. And oh, yeah. He was basically an outcast. And
yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I was shocked because in the United States, you know, we talk about Thanksgiving and right. you know, 1492.
And Columbus Day.
Mm-hmm. All the things. So it does matter where you mm-hmm. get your information right. from and what that historical mm-hmm. perspective mm-hmm. is. And supporting other people does mm-hmm. not hurt your people. Mm-hmm. We're all Americans. It's going to lift all of us
yeah,
up.
Yeah, it's the, you know, the boat rises with everybody, you know, yeah. that type of thing. You know, and yeah, and just knowing where we all came from. I mean, you know, because it like you said, you know, we are a huge melting pot, you know, you have Scottish and Irish. I have Nigerian blood. Not quite sure where it came from. It, you know, and I was like, okay. You know, and you know, gotta love ancestry.com, right? Yes. Yeah, and that was like, oh, well, that's interesting. And it's in several of my family members. So it wasn't that, you know, it was just some strange, you know, thing. But yeah, and I mean, clearly, you know, it popped that I was Scottish and I was like, well, that's just a big surprise. But yeah, you know, we have all of this. And even if you're, you know, in a country where you've never gone anywhere, you still have all, you know, nobody has been completely isolated.
Yeah.
And so we have all of these outside influences. So why not embrace and learn from them?
Yes, 100%. You know, we at Cultures, we say that we activate 21st century cultural diversity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned before, when I go to the different places, in each magazine, mm-hmm. we talk about the history and the culture of the mm-hmm. people. And in Spain, I was really shocked to see how much East Indian heritage, how much African heritage mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. Madrid in particular. Mm-hmm. And even that Arabic and is part of mm-hmm. Spanish. I mean, mm-hmm. words and phrases that we use. I mean, I had no mm-hmm. idea, right? So, as much, I'm looking forward to really delving into that mm-hmm. because as much as we talk about this being 21st century mm-hmm. cultural diversity and people being shocked that mm-hmm. there's people like me in the world, 283 million people, by the way, but as of 2018, mm-hmm. live outside of their passport countries and who grow up with mm-hmm. these different ways of being.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as much as we're shocked by that, mm-hmm. if we look way back, mm-hmm. that literally is how the world was.
Right. Nobody, you know, for the most, you know, people were wanderers, right? Yes. They went where food was. They went, you know, all of those, you know, we were hunter gatherers. And so you went wherever.
Yes, 1,000%. Mm-hmm. And so to see all the mixtures and even the cultures that we know mm-hmm. today, many of them are mixtures from other cultures mm-hmm. in the past.
Right.
So I really look forward to looking for mm-hmm. looking through that. But in the meantime, I'm going to do my little piece to make mm-hmm. sure that we are as open-minded as possible.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Embrace as mm-hmm. many ways of being mm-hmm. as possible and mm-hmm. to really champion this cultural mm-hmm. in-between so all of us can embrace mm-hmm. our cultural fluidity.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, oh my gosh, this has just been fantastic. I wasn't even paying attention to the time. And I looked down and went, yikes, we're almost done. Because see, this is why I set the timer. We'd go on forever, right? So tell us more about the magazine. How can people find it? How can they, read it? All those various things.
Yes, yes, yes. So we have done it all. We've been in Whole Foods and Barnes and Noble and Safeway, all the things. Mm-hmm. What's the Safeway? King Supers. No, it mm-hmm. was Kroger stores. But
yeah, I was going to say Kroger out here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. So this year we've switched it and we've gone to Amazon, universities, and online. So
okay.
CulturesMag.com, mm-hmm. CulturesMag.com.
No E.
.com, no E, cultures with no E. Mm-hmm. It's I spell it because you would be surprised how many times you say it and people still type it. Or mm-hmm. so cultures with no E, mm-hmm. mag.com. Mm-hmm. It's a place to find it mm-hmm. online and through universities. So again, in Boulder, we've been working with the students at mm-hmm. CU Boulder and they are calling themselves Get Cultured.
I love it. CU, big CU, right? Cultured, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they have a website, Get Cultured Boulder, and there you can sign a pledge to get cultured and stay cultured. So,
I love that my buffs are doing good.
Yes, I've been so impressed with them. They're really doing so many things. So mm-hmm. it's been wonderful to work with them. But culturesmag.com, and then you can go to Get Cultured Boulder to sign up on the pledge. Mm-hmm. And we would love it. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you do this, but I could do a discount code for your.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. We'll put it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I will send it to you. Okay. And that will be great because we are an organization that's supported by our subscribers mm-hmm. and everything that we do is for our subscription mm-hmm. base. We also have a membership mm-hmm. where you can get immersed in culture 4 times a year wow. straight to your door. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's absolutely outstanding. The food, all 5 senses, mm-hmm. the sound, the sights, mm-hmm. the taste of the particular culture mm-hmm. that we're in. And this next one is Trinidad and Tobago. So,
so much fun. So much fun. Well, oh my gosh, Donnie, this really has been just absolutely wonderful. And I think we need to have you on again because this is a subject that we have to continually be talking about. Wouldn't it be great if we didn't have to talk about it?
It would be amazing. It would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm old, probably not going to happen in my lifetime, but maybe, for our students at CU and other universities, it might, where it's just, okay.
Wonderful. Yeah. We were talking about the pronouns. It's been wonderful to mm-hmm. see how students of today mm-hmm. they're more adept at mm-hmm. this, mm-hmm. I think, than the earlier generation. Right. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to seeing where they take mm-hmm. it.
I love it. Yeah, it's going to be so much fun to see that. Well, do you have any final thoughts that you want to leave everyone with?
Well, my final thought would be definitely to, make a pledge to yourself. Make a pledge to every day. Do what you can to be more open, right? If you run, if you meditate, even if you're just making your coffee in the morning, take a few seconds and think, what can I do today to make a difference in my life, in my family's life, in someone else's life? And being open-minded, and it's not like, oh, I'm open-minded, not like that. Being intentionally open mm-hmm. to people who aren't like you, to situations that you normally are not in, is the first step. Mm-hmm. And again, we talked about Black History Month, being intentional about seeking out information that's different than you would normally do. That will make such a huge difference in your life, in the life of your family, and the people around you. And I would be extra happy if you did that with Cultures at culturesmag.com.
I love it. So much fun. Well, I'm Deb Creer. I've been having such a wonderful discussion with Donnie Aldean. And until next time, everyone have a great day.
Tune in for our next program for even more trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. The Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer, is proud to be part of the C-Suite Network. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.